So they took three athletes for each event to the Olympics, and two of them were selected straight away, but they hadn't done the qualifying time in competition. And my granddad had done the qualifying time but wasn't selected. And it got closer and closer to the Olympics, and I still hadn't picked the third athlete. And my nan wrote a letter to the head of the committee and basically said, "Oh, is it because my granddad came from lower class to sort of middle class and the other athletes didn't? But my granddad was faster than all of them, basically." And my nan sent this really strong letter, and my granddad got invited to this sort of buffet dinner thing with the committee, and it ended up he came home at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and my nan was like, "What are you, where have you been? Like, you've come home 2 o'clock in the morning." And my granddad went, "Oh, just to let you know, I'm going to Tokyo."
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast. I'm Craig Lewis and that was the voice of Georgia Francis. Now Georgia is talking about her granddad, William McKim, who raced at the Olympics in Tokyo back in 1964 and narrowly missed out on qualifying for the finals of the event as he was suffering from illness at the time. Georgia told Michelle and I how Bill had gone on to run a sub 4 minute mile just 7 years after Sir Roger Bannister achieved that feat for the very first time. Later in life, Bill turned his attention to marathons, running the New York event in 2 hours 35 minutes, and he set up Thetford Athletics Club in his spare time. He also went on to become something of an explorer, climbing Mount Everest twice and trekking across the Inca Trail. I started off our conversation by asking Georgia about her granddad and his Olympic achievement.
My granddad, William McKim, was an Olympic athlete in the 1964 Olympics as a 1500 metre runner, marathon runner, extreme hiker, idiot. He just, crazy character. He just always wanted to do everything when he was here. And when he was little, he came from a background that he didn't really have a lot, so he just wanted to run. I think for him it was just a sense of freedom to, because he was one of six children, so he just wanted to run. And I remember him telling me a story about where, I think he was seven or eight, and where they lived in Corby, there was like a an island in the shape of an athletic track outside their house, and my granddad wanted to do 100 laps of this track. And he got to lap 97 and his mum called him in for dinner, and he came in and never did the 100 laps, and he was fuming. He was so angry because he just wanted to do it, but because he was so humble and such an honest man, he just did what his mum told him to do, so he never got to do the 100 laps. But he did so much cross country, and when he got selected for the Olympics, he wasn't selected originally. So they took three athletes for each event to the Olympics, and two of them were selected straight away, but they hadn't done the qualifying time in competition. And my granddad had done the qualifying time but wasn't selected. And it got closer and closer to the Olympics, and I still hadn't picked the third athlete. And my nan wrote a letter to the head of the committee and basically said, "Oh, is it because my granddad came from lower class to sort of middle class and the other athletes didn't? But my granddad was faster than all of them, basically." And my nan sent this really strong letter, and my granddad got invited to this sort of buffet dinner thing with the committee, and it ended up he came home at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and my nan was like, "What are you, where have you been? Like, you've come home 2 o'clock in the morning." And my granddad went, "Oh, just to let you know, I'm going to Tokyo." And my nan was like, "Oh my god, you're going to Tokyo?" And he went, "Yeah, I don't really want to go now." And my nan was like, "You're joking, like, I've done all this hard work to get you into the Olympics." Like, "Yeah, I'm not really that fussed now, I've proved a point." So he ended up going, but I think it was only a couple of weeks before going to the Olympics, and he had to have all these jabs to go to Japan. And one of the jabs, you had to have 6 weeks in between both of them, but they just did 6 days because they didn't have time. So my granddad, when he actually went to the Olympics, really wasn't very well. So he competed and he came fourth, and I think he only just missed out on qualifying, but he just loved the experience. Like, for him going to Tokyo, like, I've got photos of him in the Olympic Village in his uniform, the whole thing was an experience. But one of the reasons he didn't want to go is because my mum had only just been born. So she was only a few months old. So he was just like, oh, I want to get this over with so I can go back home. But then he ran his first sub 4 minute mile when he got home. And I think he did 3:59.4. So it was the same as Sir Roger Bannister, just 7 years after. Oh. And my granddad run second sub 4 minute mile exactly the same time a year later. So he was fast. He was really fast. And then he just decided that he was done with mid distance running and then just turned to marathons. And he ran his first marathon record in New York. I think it was 2:35. So again, pretty fast. And then my mum took up running. And my granddad, they'd moved to Thetford at the time, and my granddad set up an athletics club there. They didn't have one. So my granddad was like, oh, I'll give something back to the athletics community. And they set up the athletics club, and they have so many athletes. The club's still running today. It'll be 50 years next year. Mm. But they've got so many athletes that have done national county titles. They've got one of the girls, obviously a bit older now, but she's sailed around the world on a little tiny yacht. And she said that she got poorly at one point, and she just remembers granddad saying to her, you're not finished until you cross the tape. And when she was poorly on the sail, she was basically told, like, you won't be able to finish. And she was like, no, my coach always told me that I wasn't finished until I crossed the tape. So she ended up kept going just because of what granddad said.
What happened from when he did that 97 laps, you know, as a kid, to the big jump to Tokyo? Because in that time for us, running was not like what I call us fun runners. You know, you didn't have people like myself, Craig. You're thinking of taking up running as well, you know, just generally running for fun, just to do 5K. Did your dad, like, become good at school, cross country, and then the potential was seen there, and then he went into clubs? How was he recognised from the kid that did 97 laps to an Olympian?
So at school, he didn't really do much running at school. All the running that he used to do was when he finished school, he became a TV engineer, and he used to run from home in Kettering. He used to run to Corby and back every day, 6 days a week, because he couldn't afford the bus fare. So that was why he then started picking up running again, because that was the only way that he could get to work. And then some days he'd run back home in between lunch to feed my mum, and then would run back again to finish the day and then run home again.
Some distance, Craig. That's some distance. Yeah.
And even training for the Olympics, obviously nowadays they've got, you know, nutritionists, they've got coaches, they've got trainers. My granddad, that was his route to work and back, was his training. And then he used to run around the cricket pitch in Kettering. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was all he had training wise for any of his runs. So
was he a member of a club? Was he a member of a club then?
He joined the Kettering Harriers, I think in his late teens. So kind of towards the end of school, he joined the Kettering Harriers and ran for them. And there's a lot of people that are still there today that are running the club that used to run with granddad, but nothing sort of like highly competitive. It was just he started picking up running from there, and then started doing like cross country and like Cannock Chase and Peterborough cross country. And then I think he just picked up 1500 metres and 5000 metres.
Knowing from tales from your granddad, what was his favourite overall in his career? Was it track, trail, or marathons, or what was his favourite?
I think his favourite was like trail running, sort of on the different surfaces, going from, he used to like running through like the trees and things like that, and being in nature. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm interested, like, I mean, he sounds to start with such a like a modest, laid back sort of person who would be very chilled out, you know, going back in after doing 97 laps, I'd been out there finishing whatever. Yeah. And then just almost it had to take your grandma to get him to go to the Olympics and so on. How well did you know your granddad? Because obviously I think he's sadly passed away now, but you knew him and I think you admired him quite a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, I spent my whole childhood with my nan and granddad. So I used to go every Friday and Saturday and stay at my grandparents. And then my granddad would take me out for like bike rides and walks and little hikes and stuff. So I spent a lot of time with my granddad, like building random things in the garden. And yeah, he was really laid back and chilled guy. I think he just took everything as it came. So we used to call him the magpie because on walks, he used to go around and pick up anything on the floor and it would stay in like a little pot for years. And then all of a sudden he'd need something and he'd go, "Ah, I've got that pin." And then he'd go back into this pot, bring out a pin and he'd use it to hang a photo up or something. And he was just like, I think because, like I said, he didn't have a lot when he was younger, that whatever he did have, he made the most of. So, I mean, we bought him so many pairs of new trainers that are still new because he just wanted to wear the other ones. And I know that there's one pair of shoes that you could pick up and rattle because the soles had worn away that much that there was actually rocks had collected in the shoes. And he used to shake them and find it hilarious that he was still wearing them after sort of like 10, 12 years of the same shoes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so runners out there listening to this who go for a pair of trainers like every 8 months, they can last a lot longer than that, folks. You don't have to. Wait until your shoes start to rattle before you even consider changing them. But he sounds like quite a modest man as well. Did you have to work quite hard to get these stories about his running out of him, or was he really keen to talk about running all the time?
No, he very rarely spoke about anything that he'd achieved. You had to. It was like getting blood out of a stone. It was more my nan telling the stories and then my granddad just filling in the gaps. But I mean, in the cupboard under the stairs was like all his medals, but they were like right at the back of the cupboard and you used to have to get everything out before you could get the medals and things out because you just didn't talk about them at all. And like you go into the house and there's cabinets full of glass crystals and things that he'd won from race meetings, and he had all of his Olympic stuff that he got given. And yeah, you wouldn't know what any of it was because you just wouldn't talk about it. And my nan, I think there was a photo of granddad crossing the line in one of his races. And I think my nan actually had to forcefully put it up on the wall because he didn't want it to go up on the wall because he didn't want people to ask him about it. Yeah, very humble man, bless him.
And just going back to the actual Olympic appearance, I think you said he came fourth, but I wasn't quite sure whether you meant he came fourth in like a heats or in that final.
So
he came fourth in
the heat. So in the morning before the race, he didn't sleep at all the night before. He was so poorly. And I think nowadays he wouldn't have been able to race at the state he was in. So I think he did really well to come where he did. And actually the time that he did was one of the qualifying times in one of the other races. So obviously it's the luck of the draw really, isn't it? But the guy, Peter Snell, that won the gold that year, my granddad actually beat, I think it was like 3 or 4 months after the Olympics. And so my granddad, I used to say to him like, "Oh, can you imagine if you weren't poorly, do you think you'd have won?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, I definitely would have won." And I was like, "Okay, yeah." He's like, "No, I know I could have done a lot better than I did, but I was just happy for the experience and to be selected for the team and everything." So yeah.
And did he look at going back again 4 years later, or had he moved on by then?
No. So my granddad actually had an ankle injury where one of the I think it was one of the nerves or something in his foot kept popping out. And yeah, it wasn't great. So that's when he stopped running for a bit. And then when he'd gone and seen a physio and they kind of like popped it back in, they'd kind of said to him, "Oh, you know, maybe take a step back." So he took up marathons instead.
This is a bit I want to know. So tell me a bit more about his marathon history.
Yeah, so I know that obviously he then took up some marathons. So I know that he did the New York Marathon. And I believe it was the Birmingham Marathon.
Yeah, that's true. There was one.
There was one back then. I think he did that one. So I believe he's only done the two because I think he just wanted to do a really good time and then move on and do something else. And I think because he'd done pretty fast time, he'd kind of gone, "Okay, marathon's tick. What can I do next?" And that's when he turned to trekking.
And that then led to his big adventures. Yeah. So do you want to tell us about his next big adventure after that?
Yeah, well, so he did Everest twice. So we've got a photo of him. He got to the highest point that you could get to without oxygen, which back then was a lot higher than you could get to now. We've got a photo of literally the peak of Everest over his shoulder. He did that twice. He did a hike in Nevada at the Grand Canyon, and there was a hike where you could go from the top right the way down to the base and then back up again, and it was supposedly a 2-day trek. So you go down, you camp, and come back up again. My granddad did it in a day because he was just like, well, I'm not going to spend 2 days at the Grand Canyon, why would I do that? So he did the whole thing in a day, and then moved on and did something else the next day. And then he did Machu Picchu. So he did the Inca Trail for 4 days. He did that for a charity, actually. I can't remember which charity it was, but he did it with a big organised group. And he did the 4-day hike to Machu Picchu, which is what I've just done because I wanted to follow his footsteps, essentially. And I have had a photo of him at Machu Picchu where I wanted to stand in exactly the same spot that he stood, which I did manage to do. And there was a lot of tears.
Yeah, we've done Machu Picchu as well. So and it's not an easy trek to do, Machu Picchu, but you did it with your mum as well. So it was you and your mum that did that.
Yeah, me and my mum did it, with a group as well. So, and then I raised money for the British Heart Foundation because my granddad, towards like the later stages of his life, suffered a lot with cardiovascular problems and things like that. So raising money for British Heart Foundation made sense. But my granddad, when we were doing day two, which was the hardest day, I just remember walking up this hill for hours and hours and hours, just thinking, granddad, are you trying to kill me? Like, why are...
Dead widows.
Dead woman's past. And I was just walking, and we'd been walking for about 5.5 hours straight uphill, and I'm just thinking, granddad, are you really trying to kill me?
I climbed up it. I did, didn't I, Craig? I was crying climbing up the hill.
I cried when I got to the top, and I think that was just because I knew it was over. And then I thought, I've still got another 2 days. But when I got back, my granddad, he just laughed at me. He just went, I didn't want to tell you how hard it was, but now you know. And on the trail, obviously, we had no phone signal at all. When we got to the Sun Gate on day four, which you know about, you're looking down on Machu Picchu, and I remember that it was really foggy, really misty, and then all of a sudden the clouds just cleared, and I checked my phone and I had phone signal. So I was like, oh, this is going to cost me a lot of money, but I really don't mind at this point. So I managed to FaceTime my nan and granddad from the Sun Gate down on Machu Picchu, and I don't think it was a particularly long conversation. It was just the three of us, me, my nan and my granddad, just crying our eyes out. And my granddad, bless him, and this is what made me cry the most, was he went, I'm so proud of you that you've done it. And I was like, oh, bless him. So, and then I just needed to get the photo stood in the same spot, so I've now can put them side by side, and I know that he knows that I did it. So
oh, so lovely. But tell us as well, because your mum was there as well, so your dad has rubbed off on your mum. Your mum has got some of your dad's genes. So tell us a little bit about your mum.
Yeah, so mum took up athletics when she was younger. She's done national titles, county titles, and then now she's extreme hiker, really. She just doesn't stop. She just wants to walk and do everything that granddad had done and more. So she obviously did Machu Picchu with us. She's not particularly fond of the idea of Everest, but I think in the back of her head she might want to do it if granddad's done it. But even now, like, she's going and doing the Camino, she's doing I think she wants to go and do loads of New Zealand and go do some hiking out there. So yeah.
And even though she's got arthritis in the knees, she's got that determination from your granddad. But you're the third generation down. Yeah. So I remember from our chat, because we met at Corfe Castle on a walking tour, you were saying that your dad's inspired you, your granddad's inspired you to maybe take up a little 5K challenge.
Yeah, definitely. I've always played a lot of sports. And when I was younger, my mum used to call me, I think, Kelly Holmes.
Yeah.
because when my brothers were playing cricket, I used to just do laps and laps of the cricket pavilion like my granddad used to.
97.
Yeah, no, not 97. I'm not that crazy. But so my mum used to watch me go round and round and round. And then for some reason I stopped. But I'd love to take it back up again, definitely. So it's something I think you said about starting with like a park run and then build it up. So yeah, and I'd love to.
I definitely feel you can do it. You know, watching you walk up, you know, the hills and that round Corfe Castle, you've got the stamina, you've got the strength. I just think mentally you need to believe in yourself that you can do it. So
yeah, and then obviously after Machu Picchu, I know I've got the fitness after doing that because that was hard.
So what is your next challenge? You know, I know it's recent that your granddad has passed, but he's inspired you, you've done Machu Picchu. He's shown you that there's more to life than what's on your doorstep. Yeah. What's your next big goal?
Okay, so I want to do as many of the modern seven wonders of the world. So my next one on the list is Petra in Jordan. There's a 4-day hike through like the desert and different terrains, and then obviously you end up Petra. So that to me is my next big challenge. Really looking at doing that next year. And I've got a couple of ideas of some things I want to do for Grandad. Once I pick up some running, set myself some little challenges to do 97 laps of Springfield Grove, which is in Corby. Yes. But I actually want to do the 100.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, yeah.
Well, at least 98.
Yeah.
Granddad will be jealous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Bless him. He'll be looking down and be thinking, I can't believe you've done the 100 and I didn't get to do it. So.
But what I loved on our chats was that you said about at your granddad's funeral that how surprised you were how many athletes and that were there to pay their respects. Yeah. So like, how old was your granddad when he passed?
Granddad was 81, so he'd have been 82 this October. There must have been 80 people at the funeral, and so many people that you hear their names and you don't know them, but you hear them from stories. And I know that there was a runner, Mick, who used to run with Grandad, and he said that he was so used to seeing Grandad's back because Grandad always finished one place ahead of him. So if my granddad was third, Mick was fourth. And Mick, bless him, he'd done loads of t-shirts, and he'd done like a photo album with all the old newspaper clippings and everything from when Grandad was running. And there was photos in there all the way from Grandad starting at Ketcher and Harriers all the way through to the Olympics that Mick had collected through the years. And my nan had said to him, oh, do you want any money for all of this stuff you've done? And he just went, no, this is between me and Bill. And Bill was what my granddad was known as to everybody. But yeah, there were so many people at the funeral that were old athletes that or old spouses of athletes that granddad knew throughout the years from Thetford and Kettering, and even people that, again, I didn't even know. But you could kind of put faces to names once you got talking. But I remember one lady coming up to me and was like, so are you Georgia? And I was like, yeah, I'm Georgia. And she was like, oh, your granddad spoke to me on the phone not too long ago, and he just spoke so fondly of you and your family. Aww. And she was like, I don't even know who you are, but thank you so much. Thank you so much.
But I want to give a shout out to your nan, because it sounds like if it wasn't for your nan, your granddad wouldn't even have had the trip to Tokyo. So I'm curious to know, like, about your nan and how supportive. We know she's supportive because she wrote that letter.
Yeah.
But was she into athletics, or did she realise this was your granddad's passion and she was just, she could see the potential, and she was 100% behind him?
Yeah, she supported him 100% at the time. And my nan remembers that my granddad's mum and dad weren't, it wasn't that they weren't particularly supportive, but they didn't think that he would do what he did do. So they almost kind of took a step back, and my nan didn't appreciate that as much as she would have hoped that they would put into it. But my granddad, being the humble man that he was, just wanted to run, so he didn't mind what level it was at. But my nan knew that he could do better. So she just pushed and pushed and pushed, and then she would stay at home and look after the the kids, and she would run, like if my granddad was out running, she'd run the athletics club, and they'd kind of like tag team really. So they were a really good team together. They both supported each other in different ways. So yeah,
I love that saying, there's always a strong woman behind a great man, and it sounds like your nan was that strong woman with your granddad.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
she's really saying there that obviously she's a strong woman, and what does that make me? I'm just thinking, really, I mean, you obviously with your granddad there was a great mutual affection and a great pride. It's a bit of a strange question, but are you prouder of him for being the Olympian, or are you prouder of him just for being granddad?
I'm just proud of him for being granddad, definitely. I when he passed, I wrote a thing that basically saying that the greatest gift I had was having him as my granddad, because I like my dad's side of the family, don't overly know, like dad didn't know his dad, so I kind of grew up with one set of grandparents, so I gave them 100%. And my granddad, I mean, he was just an absolute maniac, of course, but we used to sit and do like puzzles in the newspapers, and we'd sit and do colouring, like stupid doodles and things like that, and just we used to play like with bouncy balls in the garden. I remember one time my nan came running out screaming because my granddad had put a ladder up on top of the shed and got me to climb up onto the shed, and my nan's screaming like, that's not safe. My granddad's like, no, it's fine, I've tested it. He definitely hadn't.
That's all right, it's not Everest.
No, it's definitely not Everest, but yeah, we used to do like loads of gardening and things like that. Granddad with a real green finger, so he loved his orchids and stuff, so he's got a 10-year-old orchid that's still going to stay, and my nan was a bit worried because she doesn't really know how to take care of it, but she's taking in as much training as she could from watching granddad, so yeah.
And if Grandad was looking down now and talking to you, thinking about doing a bit more hiking or running, or to other people starting to look at running, what do you think he'd say to them about running?
He'd probably say, don't be an idiot and don't do as much as he did, because the amount of injuries that he had from doing all the stupid things that he did, he'd say, do what you want to do, but do it sensibly. Definitely don't do it how he did it.
Oh, but he loved it.
Oh, he did love it, yeah. Otherwise, I don't think he would have done as much as he did if he didn't like the idea of pushing himself to the absolute limit, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Georgia, thank you so much for joining us and telling your granddad's story for us. I hope other people will enjoy it as much as we did today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks again to Georgia Francis for joining us today and spending some time to talk about her fantastic granddad William McKim and to hear about his Olympic experiences. You really do get the impression that given a fairer wind and some more backing from his own association, that Bill could have gone on to be an Olympic champion. Nevertheless, his running, hiking and marathon achievements are fantastic to hear about, and we hope it inspires you on your own running journey. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen, and we'll see you again next week for another Running Tale.